Psalm 142, verse 1. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and with my voice unto the Lord did I make my supplication. I poured out my complaint before him, I showed before him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my path, and the way wherein I walked have they privily laid a snare for me. I looked on my right hand, and behold, and beheld, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. I cried unto thee, O Lord. I said, Thou art my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. Attend unto my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise thy name. The righteous shall compass me about, for thou shalt deal bountifully with me. This is the word of the Lord. As I came in a few moments ago, it brought back memories of my own college experience. In 1998, I went off to college and can remember the different emotions of that first year. There's certainly the emotions of fear, wondering how you're going to get all this work done. The teachers give you all of their, each teacher gives you his or her syllabus. And you look at that and think, there's no way I can get this done. But another emotion I experienced in college was loneliness. I can remember how lonely it was. And even though I lived in a dorm full of smelly, loud young men, it was still a very lonely place. And of course I thought that being married would solve all the loneliness issues. And I had dated my wife since the 11th grade of high school. We're both graduates of Cross Lanes Christian School. And so I thought, well, being married will solve all loneliness. And for a season, it can mitigate loneliness, but it doesn't solve it. There's different kinds of loneliness. And so this morning, as we dive into Psalm 142, it's helpful for us to begin by asking, what is loneliness? What is loneliness? Well, we know loneliness is not the absence of people. For you can be filled with people in a presence of many, many people and still be lonely. You can be in Kings Island around tens of thousands of people on a summer afternoon and be lonely. You can have 10 children playing in the room around you or playing at your feet and have your dearest of kin with you at Thanksgiving or at Christmas and still be lonely. So loneliness is not the absence of people, but loneliness is the presence of pain. It's a specific kind of pain. It's the pain that comes from feeling as though no one knows me or no one loves me. It's the pain or the feeling of thinking no one knows me or no one loves me. The context of Psalm 142 lends itself to this feeling of loneliness. Imagine, if you will, as David, not yet King David, but David is in the cave about 10 miles southwest or so of Jerusalem, and he's running for his life. As we focus on the entrance of the cave, we notice David sitting alone. He's dirty, he's bleeding, he's hungry, and he's being hunted like a wild animal. What makes David so interesting at this point is that he was considered to be the crown prince of Israel. But no longer is he sleeping on his palace bed. Instead, he's sitting and sleeping in a cold, damp rock in a cave. This is the same David who had defeated Goliath, who had married the king's daughter, who was best friends with the king's son. And how could David get here, and why was he hiding? Why was he lonely? Well, we learn that the current king, Saul, had disqualified himself from being king. And Saul was extremely jealous of David. And David, though he was the runt of his family, had risen to prominence, and people were singing his praises in the streets. And so Saul wanted to have David knocked off, David completely removed from the equation. So David ran and hid. After receiving some food and a sword from a priest, and after finding no help in other cities, David found shelter in this cave where we see him now. We don't have to wonder what David was feeling, because he shares what he was feeling in Psalm 142. Notice with me just three aspects of his loneliness. These aren't the main points, but let's see how he... First of all, loneliness caused David to cry. In verses 1 and 2, he says, I cried to the Lord with my voice. With my voice unto the Lord did I make supplication. I poured out my complaint before him. I showed before him my trouble. He was once a hero, like a tribute in the Hunger Games. But now he's crying. In Hebrew poetry, each of these expressions builds on the other. It's just other ways of saying the same thing. He was emotionally distraught. Just think of the psychological adjustment that had to be made. God, where are you? This doesn't match my life plan. You've gifted me and you've called me to be king. Why am I crying in a cave? But loneliness also caused David to feel trapped. Look at verse 3, the last part of verse 3. He says, in the way wherein I walked, have they privily laid a snare for me. You see the same idea in verse 7, at the beginning of verse 7. Bring my soul out of prison that I may praise thy name. It's important for us to notice to whom David is speaking in verse 3. He switches. Instead of just talking about God, he begins to talk directly to God in verse 3. God, I feel trapped. I am in prison. God, save me. And loneliness can cause us to feel trapped as well. Have you ever tried to reach out to somebody just to be their friend? And you thought, well, they may not be my best friend, but I'm here at college. I don't know very many people. I'm going to reach out to so-and-so, this girl, this guy. And their friendship isn't reciprocated. They don't care. They don't give you any attention. Now, guys, I'm not talking about that girl you have your eye on. But you reach out for genuine friendship, and you know what it's like to be rejected, to feel trapped in loneliness. Maybe you're a mom here who feels trapped. You have your education, and you have this plan, and you had this dream, but it seems that most of your day is filled with taking care of dirty diapers and runny noses, and you feel just, you know this is what God's called for this season of life, but you still feel trapped. Maybe you're a man, and you lost someone that you love very close to you. You lost a child. You lost a grandma. You lost a grandpa. You've lost someone close. And you know this Christmas you're going to go home for the holiday and that person's not going to be there. And already there's this sense of loneliness in your soul. And there's nothing you can do about it. And you feel somewhat trapped. Loneliness will do that to you. But loneliness also caused David to feel unloved and unknown. Look with me in verse 4. You see this emotion coming out. Different aspect of the same feeling. Verse 4, he says, I cried unto thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. Verse 4, excuse me. I looked on my right hand, and behold, there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. Verse 6, the same nuance. Attend to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. The desire to be known and to be loved is at the heart of what it means to be human. If you've ever been the last person kicked for the kickball team, or picked for the, not kicked, but picked for the kickball team, the last person picked for the game of pickup basketball, or maybe you were that kid in school that just could never crack the popular code. You know a little bit about what it means to be unknown and unloved. But God has created us with a desire for this. It's the essence of the Trinity. The Father loves the Son loves the Spirit, and God's created us in His image with this sense for community. It's why the most important events in life are events associated with the beginning and ending of social bonds, weddings, births, deaths, and so on. Anne Hathaway summarized it well when she said, "Loneliness is my least favorite thing about life. It's the thing I'm most worried about, is being alone with nobody or anybody to care for, or someone who will care for me." Loneliness is what caused Tom Hanks to speak to a volleyball, Wilson, for days on end, because God had created him, even a fictional character, for community. There's been a lot of research on loneliness. Thanks to MRI technology, we know that the same part of the brain that's activated when we experience rejection is the same part of the brain that senses physical pain. And once loneliness becomes chronic, it's not escaped easily. I'm not here today just to tell you, well, you just need to come out of your shell. Or it's not escaped simply by losing weight or getting a makeover or meeting Mr. Right or Mrs. Right. Sometimes loneliness is a long journey that requires much gospel work to escape. So what is that gospel work? What are some truths that can set us free from Psalm 142? All of that so far has been introductory. Don't worry, there's not much left to the message. But if you're taking notes, I'd like you to see three mountain peaks in Psalm 142. Those of you who, I guess all of you who are studying homiletics or hermeneutics, Psalm 142, interestingly, is constructed around three mountain peaks. And if you're taking notes, it's in verse 3, verse 5, and verse 7. The literary structure of this psalm is built on three confessions that David gives in verse 3, verse 5, and verse 7. What are those confessions? Well, number one, David's first confession, you can take these back to your dorm. God, You know what's best for me. God, You know what's best for me. In verse 3, the first part, he says, "When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then Thou knewest my path." David realized that his loneliness was part of his God-planned journey. He recognized that God was writing his story, even in the 10 years that he ran from Saul. For some reason, God allowed him to experience this loneliness, just as he allows us to experience loneliness in life. There's nothing embarrassing about being lonely. It's another reminder that God has made us. Loneliness is proof that we are designed for relationships, that we are indeed human. And just as hunger causes us to seek food and thirst causes us to seek water, loneliness reminds us that we're created for relationship. And it's another beautiful aspect of being made in the image of God. The word "knewest" or "know" in verse 3 isn't just that God knows everything about David. That's a given. We don't want to read New Testament passages into the Old Testament in every instance. Certainly God knows the hairs on our head. But this word for know or knowledge in context refers to intimately, personally cared for the details of David's life. Last year, Sarah and I celebrated our 15th wedding anniversary. And so we wanted to do something with the kids. For our 10th wedding anniversary, we went away by ourselves. But it's occurring to us how many summers we have left with our kids. I got a little daughter who starts high school next year, 9th grade. And then we thought, well, we have, what, 4 or 5 summers left at home with our kids. So we're going to probably save most of the going away by ourselves all the time until after they're out of the house. So we took the kids to Disney for the first time. Anybody here ever been to Disney? Disney World? Okay, oh, most of it. I had never been, never grew up here in Charleston, never been to Disney. My wife had never been. Girls had never been. So we took them, and they have an amazing app now where you can design your whole experience. No need to pay a travel agent. You can be your own travel agent. You can schedule on the app where you eat, what rides you enjoy, what princesses, I have daughters, sorry guys, what princesses you get to meet. And because we knew our daughters, we knew how to design that trip in such a way that would be the greatest blessing to them. We love our daughters. I know what their favorite Disney movies are. I know what their favorite characters are, their favorite princesses are. And so we had planned to the best of our ability every day around a loving relationship for our daughters. Now, the illustration breaks down somewhat. Life isn't Disney World. But God knows you. God loves you and knows exactly what you need in life to give you the best, the fullest experience of His glory and to make you into the image of Jesus. God knows you. And in your loneliest hour, seek the Lord. He knows what's best for you. There's another confession that David gives in verse 5. Not only, God, you know what's best for me, but I love this one. In verse 5, it seems that he says, God, you are what's best for me. In verse 5, I cried unto thee, O Lord, and said, Thou art my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. Number 2, God, you are what's best for me. In verse 5, David remembered that God is his refuge. A refuge was a place of shelter, of safety, a stronghold, a fort, or a castle. And in verse 5, David goes even farther by saying, you are my portion. It's this idea of saying, God, you are all I want. Here's a big truth. It's not on the screen, but a big truth you can remember or write down. God wants me to seek Him more than He wants me to escape my loneliness. I'll say that again. God wants me to seek Him more than He wants me to escape my loneliness. And it's very important that we see, just because we're followers of Jesus doesn't mean we're exempt from suffering. You know that. Sometimes, all the time, I don't like to suffer. I don't suffer very much. My life is very, very good. I don't know suffering like most of my brothers and sisters around the world know suffering. But I know already that it's easy in ministry to get bogged down and busy with the burdens of others, that the escape, getting away from ministry burdens is so tempting, whether it be getting busier with life or cranking up the music or binge-watching something on Netflix or doing anything to distract oneself from being alone. I told my wife the other day, I said, it has occurred to me, even as I'm working through this message, it has occurred to me that I will do anything not to be alone with my own thoughts. That's not good. I confess that. I want to lean into this text. I want Christ to form more in me. I remember thinking, we talked about this the other night, that when I get married, I'll no longer be lonely. And so we get married, and then Sarah and I think, you know what, we're kind of lonely. Let's have some kids. Now we have kids. And you're thinking, what was free time like again? What was that? But you're still, there's this sense where kids don't satisfy. God, if only I could be a part of that ministry, if that church hires me one day, then all of my longing will go away. And then you get the job at that church, and it doesn't go away. I was thinking about, I don't know why each of us experience the emotions that we do and to the degrees that we do. Part of its nature and part of its nurture. But here's another big truth. Life can never satisfy our loneliness. But it's designed to teach us that God is enough. Life can never satisfy our loneliness, but it's designed to teach us that God is enough. I remember being in Bible college, coming home and speaking with my pastor about how hard it is. Some of you, I get it. You don't sleep much, especially if you have to pay your own way through school, pay your own way through college. You go to school, then you go to work, and you come home, and you try to do homework, and you have 10 cups of coffee, and you get up at 5 in the morning, and you do it all over again. I remember telling my pastor, man, this is hard. And him telling me that trees grow their deepest roots in the winter. When all the sap runs down to the bottom and it seems like there's no life on the outside, that's when the trees are growing their deepest roots. And right now is when many of you are growing your deepest roots in life. It's great to remind yourself this truth. In your loneliness hour, seek the Lord. He knows what's best for you, and He is what's best for you. There's one last confession that David gives in verse 7. It's the third mountain peak of this text. And it's simply this. God, You've promised that my loneliness will not last forever. It's another good truth to tell yourself in your car, in your house, in your dorm room, in your ministry. God, You promised that loneliness will not last forever. Verse 7. Bring my soul out of prison that I may praise Thy name. Notice this confession. The righteous shall compass me about, for Thou shalt deal bountifully with me. God, You've promised my loneliness will not last forever. In verse 7, the idea of the righteous or the righteous ones is similar. It's not apples for apples, but it's similar to this idea of the family of God today. It was the community of faith. And David confesses he knows that one day in the future, the family of God was going to surround him, the righteous ones. He would no longer be lonely in a cave. Samuel had already anointed him to be king, and he had the promise that God's people would gather around him and crown him to be king, to fulfill Samuel's anointing, even though he didn't know how God was going to do it. It's important, though, for us to understand that in verse 7, it never got resolved in David's lifetime. It was never resolved. You know, at first blush, you look at this and say, oh, verse 7 was a prophecy. It all came to pass when David was finally anointed king. Then it came to pass. But it wasn't. Can you think, as you know David, and you know the Bible well, if you've been at ABC any length of time, you think of David's life after he became king. Is there any instances where you can remember where he was lonely and made poor choices in his loneliness? Yeah. Several. See, verse 7 didn't get resolved because people came around him, which goes back to the beginning. Loneliness is not the absence of people, it's the presence of pain. And David, instead of letting God satisfy and God be his portion, David made poor choices. God, You've promised that my loneliness will not last forever. But here's something for us to remember. It doesn't mean that we'll always be cured from loneliness in this life. It doesn't mean that you always be cured from loneliness in this life. If it could fully satisfy, if life could fully satisfy in every way, there would be no need for Jesus or the promise of future resurrection. While we are thankful for God's gift of good friends on earth and family and loved ones and the community of believers, our loneliness will only be fully satisfied when we stand in the presence of God. See, here's the main point, putting all three together. In your loneliest hour, seek the Lord. He knows what's best for you. He is what's best for you. And He promises that your loneliness will not last forever. When I went to seminary in 2011, having been in ministry for 9 years, was the first time in 9 years that I was somewhere that no one knew me and I didn't know them. And so people aren't just out there waiting for you to graduate, ready just to throw full-time ministry jobs at every turn. There are times where I had to go to work in 2011 for a cable company until the church I was a part of hired me on full-time. Sojourn Community Church in Louisville. And I remember for those first few months of going into the cable company and punching in and punching out, something, again, I hadn't done in years. And I remember, we'd go hang out with the guys at the Smoke Shack. And I didn't do what they did, but I'd go hang out where they were. And it's just people I hadn't been around my entire life. I remember one of my good friends, the week before Easter, he said this. We were hanging out on our break. He says, "Hey, you're a preacher, right?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, you're in school, right? Bible school, right?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Let me ask you this." He says, "Where is God in the middle of my loneliness? Where is God?" It was a week before Easter. "Where's God in the middle of my suffering?" He's going through a lot. And the Spirit of God gave me the words to say. And sometimes as a pastor or a man or woman leader in ministry, you don't always get it right, but sometimes you do. And the Spirit of God brought it to my mind. It's the week before Easter. "Matt, where is God in the middle of my loneliness?" What's the answer? What was the answer for him? What's the answer for you? It's simply this. It's Jesus Christ hanging on a cross, the second person of the Trinity. Does God understand your loneliness? Remember what he prayed? "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And while we can't grasp the gravity of that statement and how that fits in the beauty of the triune God, Jesus knew loneliness. And because he stepped into your loneliness, you can step into his satisfaction. In your loneliest hour, seek the Lord. He knows what's best for you. He is what's best for you. And he promises your loneliness will not last forever.